I don't know who's just here having their coffee and who came for storytelling, but is we're trying to set up different times, like down in the Bombardier and here during coffee hour, to just hear people's stories about times at Holden, either this time or times in the past, things that have been formative in their lives, or just humorous stories, serious stories, memories, so things like that. So I don't know. Did people come with any stories they wanted to share?
My daughters told me I need to get down and tell some stories, so I'll
absolutely. Here. So if you just say your name and then you can.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Yeah, my name is Steve Tung, and my wife and I were here from 91 to 94. I was operations manager, and Amy was registrar. She started Lawns and Gardens and then became registrar. So we came here in January. Amy had never even been to Holden. We had been looking at possibly coming out here, and then was kind of waffling on it, and she said, well, if you're not going to go, then I'm going to go out there. You'll just have to come out and visit me from time to time. And so in January, with all of our belongings on the back of the snowcat, took us up the hill here. And, you know, I really give her incredible faith and credit for being willing to just come here sight unseen and have the faith to that. And we signed on initially for 2 years, and then we stayed on for a third year. There's lots of funny stories, and I could probably go on for a while, but the girl said that, my daughter Abby here, so they say I should tell you the one about some pranks that we played on the winter when the college students would come up. I think it's called Sojourn then. I don't know what they call it now, but so they would, groups of college students would come up, and they would always be a little leery about coming to Holden in the winter, and we realized that, and we decided to kind of prey on those fears and have a little fun with them, mess with them. So one year we staged all these elaborate pranks as they came in the village, and maybe they still do this, I don't know. But that year we, when the bus arrived, when the boat arrived at the dock in Lucerne, we had it timed perfectly that just as the lady was backing up from the dock, the person greeting the student said, of course, you folks brought all the toilet paper that we sent you that note about, right? And we got all these blank looks. They said, what? You didn't bring the toilet paper? Well, and then there's kind of like panic look expressions among the Holden staff at that point. And they said, oh, this is not good. This is, you know, we've been waiting weeks for this. We're down to the last roll. We've been, you know, rationing it one square per person per day. And now you guys come in here, you know, and we'll just have to figure out a way to deal with this. And so we started off with that. We told them about Bigfoot sightings that had been, and we said, you know, a lot of people don't believe in that, and we don't blame you if you don't, but you know, we've been living up here in the winter. It's so as we were coming up the road, we had to have, of course, the person in the gorilla suit kind of run across in front of the bus, and then of course the staff had to act like nothing happened and see what the students would react. They arrived in the village and went in the dining hall to have their first meal, and they saw these strings lined all over the dining hall, the tea bags hanging from them, and they asked what that was about, and we explained at the end that you'll learn about that when we explain how we clean the dishes and put them away, and that we really are trying to be ecologically sound here at Holden, and so we'll just show you using a simple tea bag how we sort the waste. And so we dissected that tea bag into the staple goes in the metal, and the little cardboard tab goes into the cardboard, and the tea goes in the compost, and the string goes into the string. You know, we had everything in the tea bag set out. And then we said, and we always end every meal the same way here at Holden, and a special way. And then we all stood up, we held hands, and we sung We Are the World. And later that evening, we explained it was all a prank. But so that was some Holden hilarity there for you.
Where's home?
We're from Michigan, Traverse City, Michigan.
What other stories do we have?
Well, if you want to hear some more, I could tell you some.
Keep going. These are fun.
Okay. So every year we would have, while we were here anyway, again, I don't know if they still do this, but the Washington Department of Corrections would bring a group of prisoners up to do invasive weed eradication in the Railroad Creek Valley. And they would set up a big camp down in Lucerne. And, you know, ever since the food here at Holden has always been terrific. And there was probably just one period of time where we had some problems in that area while we were here in the early 90s. And it got so bad that staff were getting on the buses and going down to Lucerne to eat with the prisoners. They had amazing food down there. And if you could get used to eating it with this sort of plastic spoon that, you know, was made to make sure that nobody could hurt each other, you know. But things were wrapping up, and the prisoners were all set to go, and a truck rolled in from Department of Corrections, and he said, "We're all set, we're leaving. Oh, by the way, a guy escaped last night, and he's roaming somewhere in the valley, and we were just going to start the high school weekends where we get like 200 high school students that would come up every weekend in the months of May." And I said, "Well, you know, what are you going to do about this?" He says, "I don't have to do anything about it." He says, "I'm Department of Corrections. I only have to worry about them while they're in my care. Once they're gone, that's the sheriff's problem." So we got on the radio to the sheriff, and we said, "What are you going to do? This prisoner's roaming Rogue Creek Valley." And they said, "Well, we heard he has really terrible eyesight. He's legally blind. And he left his glasses behind in the sleeping bag. So we don't think he's going to be a problem, but you know, just keep an eye out for him." And so we had all these high school students coming in and their church groups, and we had to post posters all around the village, be on the look out for David Ford was his name, never forget the name. And so days went by, we had like staff kind of doing a perimeter thing, we had a whole thing set up so that one afternoon these kids came running, I was in the operations office here, came running in, we saw the prisoner. And so we quickly kind of got the perimeter set up, and we called the sheriff, because sheriff, quite honestly, didn't even bother. I think they came once a day and drove their vehicle up and down the road and then went back down the boat. And so they said they had seen him, and so we set up kind of the perimeter, and then the helicopters arrived, and they were going up and down the valley, and the search dogs were searching, and they searched for hours and couldn't find the guy. And finally they decided to take a break, so they were kind of hanging out here at the Ark and inside and having dinner, and the guy just walked right down the main street here, just walked right in, walked up past the dogs, the search dogs were just sleeping there. And he told the guys, he said, you know, every time the helicopter would fly over, he'd run out to a clearing and try to, but this was like 3 days. He was so hungry. He was so thankful. We took him in the dining hall. We fed him. And then back then, you may remember the Holden prayer that you'd send somebody on. So we all stood up. We said, "Lord, call your servants to ventures of which we cannot see the ending, by paths as yet untrodden, through perils unknown. Give him faith to go out with good courage, not knowing where he goes, but only that your hand is leading him and your love supporting him in Jesus Christ." And then David Ford went down the road with the corrections officials. And that next week in the lift, a very clever village musician wrote about the ballad of Davy Chevrolet in his honor. So that was... Yeah. And he somehow got all the way up the road and... back to the village. You know, the corrections people told us that they never gave the prisoners any clues as to where they were, and they just told them that there's no way out of here. You know, I mean, if you escape, I know the year before we arrived, they had a prisoner steal a boat in Lucerne and try to paddle out, and they caught him pretty soon too. So it wasn't. Yeah, they weren't. Yeah, yeah.
What was his response to the community and to the blessing?
You know, I think after wandering around the woods dazed for, you know, he was a little bit, you know, dazed by all the attention, I'm sure, but I don't really remember too much, but it was an interesting Holden hospitality moment.
You don't take the dangerous prisoners on the
Yeah, that's what they told us. And then they told us that he had been in for armed robbery. And we knew there was weapons down in Lucerne at some of the cabins. And so we were a little nervous about that. But we also knew he didn't have his glasses, so he couldn't see anything. So he wasn't going to be able to probably shoot straight if he did. But anyways.
You reminded me of something that I'll tell real quick. I had no intention of coming out here for this. I was just coming out for a place in the sun. Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm just finishing up my weaving. And I came as a maybe 7 or 8 year old long, long ago, and then not again till our kids were about that age. I think my youngest was more like 4 or 5. My oldest was 7 or 8. And we've been coming every 2 or 3 years. We're from the Portland area, and it's convenient and been a wonderful gathering spot for us over the years. And my husband and oldest son have hiked in over from the other side several times over Spider Gap and met us here. And we all hiked in as a family a few years ago. So we have numerous memories of hikes and hospitality and speakers. And it's a really important place. It's been really special for all of my kids, helped form, I think, their whole spiritual development along with our church in Portland. But the one thing I had forgotten about, and I keep looking for my son because it would be fun to have him tell the story, but his J term at PLU, probably 5 or 6 years ago, he came up as a freshman, and we got a letter from him saying, wow, the power's so low in the winter that we have to take rotating shifts through the night to keep the bike the power to all the dishwasher and all the machines. So he said, you know, tomorrow I have the bummer shift of 2 to 4 a.m. or something. So they did this the whole month without anybody telling him that it was a joke. And the funny thing is we couldn't get a letter up here fast enough, but we found out from our church secretary, whose daughter was on staff up here, that she was the one who had kind of decided on this for this particular group. So it was a good friend of his from the staff that had decided this group needs to keep the bikes running through the night. So that was a letter. We knew once we got the letter and we told Tony, wow, did you know about this? And she said, yeah, I think my daughter Stephanie thought up that joke. And we're like, it's a joke. She said, yeah, they don't really need that. So anyway, that was... Somebody's got something.
Other people with stories to share.
You probably have some.
Yeah, you must have stories to share.
Your dad does, you do.
Well, I guess the one thing that I sort of think about when I think about Holden is the micro bears or chipmunks. And you can always tell, like, newbies by the way they sort of, like, try and coax them with pieces of food. But I remember it was a few years ago, I was walking up the path over there, and there was a gentleman who was reading a book, and I assume he must live here. And there's a chipmunk that jumped onto his foot, and without blinking an eye or looking up from his book, he just flings his foot. The chipmunk goes flying across the road, and he just continues reading. So anyway.
I'll take a run at it. So the second time I came up to Holden was the winter of 96, 97. And we actually had, I don't remember exactly how many, but probably about 12 of us that were kind of coming up from our church, just kind of a loose-knit group. And 4 of us were going to get in the village on a Friday. Is that right? Because I'm trying to think. This is during the winter, so they run the boats Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so a group of us were going to get in the village on Friday, and then the other 2 groups are going to come in on Sunday. So anyway, the 4 of us, myself, 2 kids, and a friend of ours, we left Portland kind of fat, dumb, and happy, and noticed they're having a bit of an ice storm though starting in Portland. Okay, well, you know, we're going. And because of the ice storm, we decided not to drive up the gorge and come up 97 because we heard the gorge is kind of messy. So we came north and grabbed the first pass across, which was White, which just driving. We're doing fine. We get into Wenatchee, I believe, is where we spent the night. And the people in Wenatchee were, you know, happy that we were there, and were a little concerned that, you know, we might not make it. And we said, why? And they said, well, at this point, Snoqualmie Pass is closed, and Stevens Pass is closed. So as it turned out, we, with blind luck, came across the only pass that was open. So, no problem. We drove up to to Fields Point the next morning and got on the boat. And an awful lot of people that were scheduled to come in that day. I was told there was supposed to be close to 60 people coming in that day. I think there was closer to like 16. And I don't know. So we got to Fields Point. We got off the boat, and it was Bombardier waiting to greet us, because as it had turned out, we just had an awful lot of snow coming down the last few days, and that's why the passes were closed. Okay, so we got on the Bombardier. Like I said, this is my second trip to Holden. We came on up to the village, and then the next day, that Saturday, it warmed up, snowed, started to rain. It avalanched down the road, and effectively closed the road. And just to make things a little messier, a flu bug happened to invade Holden that right about that exact same time. So what we had was a closed road, an avalanche that had closed the diversion dam up in Copper Basin, and about half of the staff that was sick. So they were looking for any volunteers that were willing. I ended up volunteering to go down the road to see what we could do about trying to get that open. This was on Saturday. We knew we had friends coming in, you know, the other rest of our group, and many other people are going to try to come in on Sunday. We were totally unable to get the road open. We were doing good just to retrieve the bulldozer. There were lots of people also planning on getting out on Saturday. Or excuse me, out on Sunday. As it turned out, we were stuck up here until the following weekend. We referred to it as the Holden hostage crisis. Because this would have been 96. That wasn't too long after the Iran hostage crisis. What was really interesting, I thought, was how the village really sort of came together. The line between staff and visitor kind of started falling apart. And people just started helping out however they could. Because like I say, a lot of the staff was sick. So visitors were filling in. I remember one fella who, and let me remind you, a lot of people were planning on heading out on Saturday, on Sunday, that couldn't for a whole week. So we're trying to communicate messages out to employers and family and stuff. This is, of course, before they had the satellite internet connection. So we would wait until the boat got to the point on the lake where they could actually hit it via radio, and they'd have a whole list of call this number, tell so-and-so that John won't be in to work until, you know, or whatever. I mean, it was a whole litany of stuff because there's, you know, several people up here. But it was interesting how, you know, everybody just sort of pitched in. Oh, that was right. I started to mention the one fellow that was trying to get his word out to his boss. He was a professional cook, so he started filling in the kitchen to help out in there, kind of hoping that he'd make a good enough impression so that if the end of this, if he couldn't get his job back because he lost it, he could still work here or something. But anyway, it was pretty funny. I remember there were several people that hadn't brought enough medication, so actually serious points to this. Yeah. Are you familiar with this?
No, or? I'm just fully imagining.
Yeah, no, there were. We just happened to have a doctor from Gresham, I remember, and he was up here at the time, and there happened to be an old copy of that large reference book for pharmaceuticals, apparently, and he was actually soliciting, you know, if you have any extra high blood pressure medication that you can spare, let me know, and he's working around with the different dosages to try to keep people going until they can get people out. I know there was one gentleman who disappeared about halfway through the stay, and we finally got to go out the next Saturday. They actually had medication on the boat waiting for him because it was serious enough. So there really were some serious things and people concerned about jobs and stuff. For us, our exit was delayed by one day. It really didn't affect us much. And it really, in many respects, was a fascinating thing to watch this community just kind of coalesce around stuff. Because like I say, there was just a ton of snow falling. It was a really interesting time, but it was really an amazing, amazing experience. Yep. So.
Story to tell?
No, I don't.
Well, thank you. Thanks for sharing stories.